two front rows practically left. Hebrews, guys, the seventh chapter. Hebrews chapter 7. Okay. All right. And before we get into verses 11 through 19, we talk about, we need to back up, obviously, because verse 11 says, therefore. So if you weren't with us last week, or if you were, and again, this is the difficulty when you break things up over a long period of time, and you're studying verse by verse, we have to keep the continuity as we go through. So let's just back up and quickly read verses 1 through 10, okay? 1 through 10, and James, three apiece. That means Dave gets three and Chanel gets four. Okay, three apiece, and let's finish this first 10 verses.
For this book is the king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. And to him Abraham appointed a tenth part of everything. He is first at my translation of his name, king of righteousness, and then he is also king of Salem, that is, king of peace. He is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God, he continues a priest forever.
Now consider how great this man was, to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoil. Indeed, those who are of the sons of Levi, who received the priesthood, have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law, that is, from their brethren, though they have come from the loins of Abraham. But he whose genealogy is not derived from the young received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promise.
But without any dispute, the lesser is blessed by the greater. And in this case, mortal men receive tithes. But in that case, one receives them, of whom it is witness that he lives on. And, so to speak, through Abraham, even Levi, who received tithes, paid tithes. For he was still in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him.
All right. Aaron is going to continue on and Nancy in just a few moments as we go on through 11 through 19. But, guys, it gets fresh in our minds because... For what I want to say, Aaron, quickly read verse 11 for us, because I want to tie this in.
If their perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek, and not be called after the order of Aaron?
All right, we're about to get in and talk about the idea that the law has changed. The lesser was blessed by the greater. So in other words, you had Abraham paying tithes to Melchizedek, and there's the key. Abraham received those promises. Remember those three promises? They were given unto Isaac and Jacob. And of course, obviously, Levi needs to come into play here because Moses and Aaron coming from the tribe of Levi. Okay, that's important, especially in the section that we're about to read. Because where did Jesus come from? What tribe?
Judah.
He came from the tribe of Judah, which we're about to read when we get into verse 14. And that's the point he's trying to get across to the people here. That we have a priesthood that Jesus is, that's greater than anything that you had here. And he goes, and the section we're going to go into is going to show us why it was greater, why this was lesser. And of course, this could not exist, the Levitical priesthood could not exist without the law. Is that true? The Levitical priesthood could not exist without the law. Is that true? The law of Moses. Could the Levitical priesthood exist without the law of Moses? No. You can't. No, because the law of Moses tells all the laws governing the priests and all their duties and all the responsibilities placed upon them. And so he's going to make the point that the Levitical priesthood is connected with the law. Okay? You can't separate the two of them. And so the point, obviously, that we're going to get into, folks, is that if there is a different priesthood now that's not according to the Levitical priesthood, it necessitates then that we have what? We're going to need another law. So remember, these people are having a hard time with the idea of leaving the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the Hebrew writer, again, obviously writing by inspiration, but I just love the logic that he uses. He's anticipating, okay? We're talking about the priesthood already. Now we're coming back to it and pointing out, I know how much you appreciate Abraham. I know how much you appreciate Moses and the law. I get that. That's important. But you got to realize that Christ, being our high priest after the order of Melchizedek, teaches us a great lesson, which you understand because of what Abraham did. You knew that, okay? The lesser, the greater, okay? And so when we go through this chapter now, the first part that we talked about last week, how that really Levi paid tithes to Melchizedek. How did he do that? How did Levi pay tithes?
Through Abraham.
Okay, so we get that. And that's the point that these people, these Hebrew brethren, needed to understand that he's greater. And so Jesus being high priest after the order of Melchizedek, oh, I get it. That puts Jesus up here, which puts the Levitical priesthood where? Lower. Okay, you need to see this. Don't get upset that we're preaching Jesus Christ as your high priest and having difficulty with that. I get you have difficulty, but I'm going to show you that you shouldn't. It's what he's doing as we go through this. I love what he does in this chapter. That's why I couldn't wait to get to chapter 7. And Aaron gets to finish it next Wednesday night. Anyhow, okay. Aaron, you got to read some more.
Go ahead. I'm trying to get all this together because to me this is a huge study.
It is.
So, the reason why Christ comes through Judah is because he has to have been an order of king lineage, right?
That's true through David.
Right.
Yes, that's brought up many times. But I think even more so with what's going on in this chapter is emphasizing that he didn't come from here. That is crucial for them to understand that Jesus, Abraham, did not come from any lineage of Melchizedek. They needed to understand that too. Oh, because, we need this family connection. Nope, there isn't any. And so as long as we get that distinction made and him paying honor or homage to Melchizedek through all of this, and then, of course, we're going to bring in one of the other sons there, as you just mentioned, is Judah, that's brought in, which he's going to bring up in verse 14.
Because Jesus is actually king and priest.
Yes, which is what I think somebody brought that up last week. We're talking about now, just the parallel that's there.
Right.
The parallel that's there. They really need to see that. Guys, when I go through this study and the times I've done, I really try to put myself in the shoes of these brethren. The struggles that they're facing, of all the history. This is their history, right? This is their history. And they put a lot of emphasis on Abraham and Moses and the law. And so I know they claim to that, but you know what? This is their history, too, of what Abraham did. And see, this, to me, it's going to prevent them from saying, yeah, but. No. I've covered everything that you could possibly come up with within all of this. And so when we're finished, chapter 13, it's like, it's a done deal. Everything we could possibly come up with to try to justify going back to the old law that you didn't deal with, Hebrew writer, we're going to bring up. It doesn't exist. And that's what makes it such a wonderful, wonderful study. And even better stuff even yet to come, I think, because he's about to get into the better, even in this chapter. What is better? Okay? Now, and Aaron, I want you to bring up some more stuff, that, you know, especially questions that any of you guys have as we go through this step by step, by putting yourself in their shoes. See, because I want you might say, I want to clear this up so there are no loose ends. And so you follow along what the Hebrew writer is trying to accomplish here. Now, he just read verse 11. After what I just said, we're going to read 11 again. But Aaron, I want you to read 11 through 13, and then Nancy, 14 through 17. And then we jump up to, yes, we got the right row. Sandy, you're going to get 18 and 19. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
If therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek, and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. For he of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar.
For it is evident that our Lord arose from Judah, from which of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning priesthood.
Stop there, Nancy. Stop right there. If we go too much farther, there's going to be too much stuff. And I'll just forget to bring it up. Let's start with your verse, and we'll work our way backwards. Preachers have been using this for years. I think it's one of the first things that I learned when I'm, you know, trying to understand biblical authority. And how many times people will say, well, it doesn't say you can't. You'll hear that argument all the time. And one of the things we always tell people is that you have to respect the silence of the Scriptures. Who came up with that? Is that a Church of Christism? You know, the silence of the Scriptures? It's not a Church of Christism. It's a doctrine of Christism, if you want to put it that way. How do I know that? Because look what the Hebrew writer says here, the Nancy writer. He says, it is evident that our Lord arose from Judah, of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning the priesthood. What's he saying? What's he saying there in layman's terms?
Never brought up.
Didn't bring it up. No duties for you. How do we know that? Aaron just read it earlier. Look at verse 13. For he whom these things are spoken belong to another tribe from which no man has officiated at the altar. The Levites. Aaron. The high priest. Not from Judah. Okay. And so we respect that. So, well, it didn't say they couldn't. It didn't say they could. That's what we tell people. It didn't say they could. And when they come back and say, well, it doesn't say they couldn't. Folks, look how many parents we have out here. You give your kids a dollar. It's the same old story. Give them a dollar. Go buy a loaf of bread. Well, you can't buy a loaf of bread for a dollar. But back in the day, okay. Say, here, go buy a loaf of bread. He comes back, he's got candy in his pocket. Well, you didn't say I couldn't. Well, the mom would have to write a book. Okay, don't buy this, don't buy this, don't buy this, don't buy this. Everything under a dollar, or a dollar and under, I've got to tell you what not to buy. No. By telling you what to buy eliminates what you cannot buy. That's logic. My point is, the Hebrew writer used it here. So we're not inventing something. It's a powerful tool that we use that prevents us from doing things that are unscriptural. We respect the silence of the Scriptures. I remember doing a sermon a long time ago, or either that was a bulletin, and I said, are you listening to God's silence? Because God's silence is ringing loud and clear as he's talking about right here and talking about Jesus and the Levitical priesthood. They didn't do that. Now, the verse that we didn't talk about yet, back up a little bit more, what Aaron read. Look at verse, he read verse 11 that we didn't get into detail on. Look, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood. If. Was there perfection under the Levitical priesthood?
No.
Why not? I see heads nodding. Trey?
Because they had to ask for forgiveness. They had to offer sacrifice for their own sin. And then they had to offer sacrifice for the sins of the people. And this was continual.
What's that mean?
They had to do it over and over again, whereas Christ's sacrifice was once.
Okay, and he's actually going to identify that later in this chapter. Yeah. Under this, this law, and it's very important, guys, that we can convey this to our friends when the subject comes up. We tell them that this law wasn't perfect, but wait a second. Where did this law come from? Wait a second. Here's where they'll get you. Are you trying to tell me the God of heaven made a mistake? Well, you just told me God made this law, okay? God made this law, and you're telling me it wasn't perfect. So how do you explain that? Tony.
It's no different than a parent making a rule, you know, is still a rule. The kids are going to break, you know, that there's always that opportunity. And the same way with God. God made the law, but yet man isn't perfect. He's going to break.
Okay, that's the first half of it. And then Trey?
Because he foreknew that that wasn't going to be the last law that he had. Because Abraham had a promise. And his promise was through his seed all into the
world. Okay, you've got two-thirds of it now. It's all coming together. Andrew?
With the law, to establish what is righteousness. Without the law, you do not have order. And so it tells what righteousness is, and it also explains what is sin. If you just transgress this, this is sin. In Galatians chapter 3, it explains saying that the law is a tutor, which brings us closer to Christ, that our faith may be justified.
Okay, well, you're telling me all that the law does, okay? So you're telling me the law is perfect. That's true, but you know, you got to understand, people are saying, look, you're telling me that you're trying to tell me that God's law is not perfect.
It was a shadow. It wasn't complete.
Mark.
Well, if you would have kept the law perfectly, then you would have been okay.
Okay. All right. Guys, you're putting it, let's put all the pieces together here, what you're talking about here. The law itself accomplished what it set out to do. You guys were mentioning that. You can't know what covetousness unless it says thou shalt not covet. Okay, that and that's what Andrew, you were explaining. What Tony and Trey were also talking about is the idea of what God designed within it, and it accomplished what it was designed for. That's the key. This law was not designed to take away sin.
It was like a tutor to teach them what the rules and the laws were.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so as I've illustrated times before, that if I have somebody babysit my child, and I say, put them to bed at 8, right? Feed them at 5. But I come home, and you fed them at 6 and put them to bed at 11. What do we do about that? The two rules I gave does not have a solution. Right? I only gave two laws. Do this and do this, and you broke them both. Now what do I do? My point is, my laws did not design a way to fix it. That's all. There's nothing wrong with my laws. My laws were good. 5 and 8. So, when you talk about God, his laws were good. It came from him. But it was not designed to take away sin, is the point. You guys mentioned it was a shadow. It was a tutor. It was a schoolmaster. It was to bring them to Christ. Why? Because the whole point with all this, and why bring this up right now? Because in the section that Aaron read is to show them that this law, if it was perfect, we didn't need another one. But he has to point out that, well, there were problems with this law. What were some problems? Well, he's going to identify them. We don't have to guess. Okay? He comes right up and talks about it. So, Nancy, continue your reading.
And it is yet far more evident if, in the likeness of Melchizedek, there arises another priest who has come not according to the law of a fleshly commandment, but according to the power of an endless life.
Read the next three, Sandy, please.
For he testifies, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. For on the one hand, there is an annulling of the former commandment because of its weaknesses and unprofitableness. For the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God.
All right. And again, in our next section, he's going to go into a little more detail about how that the new law is better, this new priesthood is better. He does mention some things in here as far as pointing out why it is better. And what did he point out about the previous law? What did he say?
It made nothing perfect.
Made nothing perfect. What else?
It was a fleshly commandment.
Fleshly commandment? Okay. Anything else?
It was unprofitable.
Unprofitable? Because of its weakness. Again, this is where people struggle with this. You got to remember, folks, if you ever talk with a Calvinist, I mean, they really get defensive on this kind of thing. Just like talking with these Hebrew brethren, they're going to get defensive because that's our old law. the Calvinists, and they, you know, in other words, the sovereignty of God. Don't you dare ever question that he ever did anything wrong. He didn't. Well, that's what you're saying. And if you're saying the law is weak, or if the law is not perfect, and we're just trying to help them see that, as you guys also mentioned, I think it was Trey or Tony mentioned there, that God did not design this because he had a plan before the foundation of the world, and that was the third promise. What was the third promise? Through your seed, all nations will be blessed. Now, why do you think that's significant to bring up to these Hebrew brethren? Yeah, they don't like this idea of all nations, do they? When Jesus Christ came, folks, the gospel was going to be for everybody. And that was a hang-up for them, of course. But see, again, you talk about Melchizedek, talk about Abraham, which, Andrew, you brought it up. Galatians, the third chapter. You ever get a chance to study with anybody who has a problem with that? Just sit there with them and just get them to read aloud the whole third chapter. Because the whole third chapter is going to point this out by saying that, you know, this law came 430 years after the promises to Abraham. And so why do you put so much emphasis on the law? Well, these are this is what's important right here. Saw your hand, Nancy.
Wasn't the law initially kind of like that's the foundation of what God was going towards and giving people direction until his plan, because he knew what he was going to do further?
There's no question that a lot of what we do today, remember, because it was a shadow of what was to come. Okay, and so those fundamentals, you know, you think of the Ten Commandments. Do we go by the Ten Commandments today?
No.
But nine of them, right, are mentioned under the new law. So obviously, the laws that God were given back here were good for the people to follow. Don't commit adultery. Have a good marriage, okay? Be a good parent, all this kind of stuff. So those laws, as Nancy's talking about, yes, but he knew the limitations of man. The law, man always needed law. How do you know man always needed law? And I mean always. How do you know that?
He gave the first law. Don't eat from this tree. I mean,
before sin was even in the world.
He gave law.
You know, we think that when you transgress, that's it. I got to give them a law to keep these guys. Look, at God gave them law before that, Mark.
Yeah. Look, but what was going on the time of Noah?
Exactly. Same thing
to himself. Just corrupts everything.
Exactly. So God knows what's best for us. It's like Jeremiah, right? It's not within man to direct his own step, but I'll tell you, it's within man to take direction. And so he gives them the law that was good for them. Now remember, guys, those that were not Jews, those who were not the Hebrew people, were a law unto themselves. Man always needed a law. They were governed by it. But ultimately, Jesus Christ was going to come. And therefore, everybody was accountable to that law. Warren.
Well, question. They also would also be fair to say that through the law, the lineage of Christ was provided to that, because God was always after them, because they were always marrying off where they keep the seed line here, because the Messiah was going to come through that seed line. And so that was another kind of benefit of that huge law.
You know, and this is great, Warren, because you are thinking like a Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
No, really, you're thinking like a Hebrew, because these brethren right here need to understand the importance of Jesus and the lineage through Judah. It was all part of the plan. And Aaron brought up earlier about him being king, okay? Him being high priest. This was necessary. But to bring those two together, we get the idea of the kingship. But you see the importance of chapter 7? You got to bring into the high priest aspect. You got to bring in Melchizedek within all of this. You're absolutely right, Warren. These people needed to see this, and God had a plan through Judah. Ultimately, the Messiah would come. And you see, guys, when Jesus does come, here's the Messiah. Why would you reject him? He was part of the plan. God had a plan, and he was going to use you Jews. Here we go. All right. Israel, right? From his name was changed to Israel. The Israelites. God had a plan that ultimately Jesus was going to come. He just used you. Now, people think, why them? Could he have chosen a Chinese race?
Yeah, it could be. This could be. I don't know any great Chinese people. My mind went blank, but.
No, there's some great leaders of the past. My mind went blank, but if you use some of those names, when I was in China, they would name these guys. And I'm just having a senior moment right now, but they would talk about these guys. Yeah, again, get a big name. God could have used anybody, but you realize, guys, there was a purpose for this. That's all. There was a purpose behind it all. And ultimately, it was for all of us to be blessed. And I think we get sidetracked sometimes. Why do you think the Filipinos have their own Filipino prophets? When you're in Toronto, you drive around, they've got their own Filipino church with their own Filipino prophets. You've got Muhammad. People want their own particular prophet. You've got Joseph Smith in America. You've got your own prophet. It's like people think, you know what? He's had theirs. We're going to have ours. Well, you missed the whole point. He's just using them for all of us to be blessed. So when I study the Hebrew letter, it's helping me as much as it's helping them to realize it's all about him. It's all about Jesus within all of this, guys. This, we need to focus on this. And so it might seem like a lot of information. Why do I need to know about the old law? But that was their handle. And this is going to help us more.
Well, it's not trotting off the side, but I think a lot of denominationalists today, they have the same problem. The Jews are a chosen people, and they view that as they're a special people set aside by God for their uplifting.
You're absolutely right. Warren, I have sat with my friends that I used to go to church with, the denomination, sit there and tell me, you know, a guy whisper over to me, man, I wish I was a Jew. I'd have a one-way ticket to heaven. Are you kidding? That's what they believe. They honestly believe that. Dave?
The purpose of the law, what purpose then does the law serve? It was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise was made.
Everything we've been talking about. Where'd you read that, Dave?
Galatians.
Chapter?
3.
Thank you. Okay. And I'll drive you home. So I saw a hand.
Go back to what Warren said, and that's why if you listen to the people in our country or other countries, that's why they say no country will ever mess with Israel. Because it's God's chosen people.
Exactly. And when I was back home, I was in a gym, and they had the TV up there, and they had a religious program on, and he was trying to solicit funds from all the religious people, saying, give us money so we can pay for these Jewish families over here to send them back home, because that's where they need to go to fulfill God's promise. We need to send them all back home. What are you talking about? Premillennialism, guys. The Lord's going to come back. He's going to set up his kingdom. And it just, everything's messed up. And like Warren said, the denominations need to get this. Absolutely. The Hebrew brethren need to get this. We need to get it. So we're not immune from this at all. Mallory?
Well, I think it's a lot to get, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, for me, again, I was raised in a church, because we spent a fair amount of time studying the Old Testament, and we just finished that thing. But you get so many other people who all they focus on is Jesus and, you know, the four books of the gospel. And so that's all they know. So even if you try to, like, explain, they don't know what the Old Law is. So it doesn't. I don't know. I feel like sometimes this is a great argument if you're talking to someone who understands, you know, what the Old Law says. But if they don't even understand that there was an Old Law, or that there is even a difference, then you gotta.
And that's it now. That, when people don't know the differences between the Old Testament and the New Testament, they're just like, just one in there and out the other. They just don't get it. And you're absolutely right about this, because so many people who believe in Jesus, to ignore the Old Testament is to ignore so many valuable, valuable lessons. We're studying through the book of Hebrews. How much percentage do you think in this book refers to the Old Testament? Enormous amount. I'd like to go through there and just see the references, you know, whether it's 65% or even more than that, just making reference to the Old Testament. And it makes the Old Testament come alive, is what it does. And you see the wisdom of it. Those things were written for our learning, and that's what we're doing tonight. Okay. Where were we? Okay, so I was asking you guys about what was wrong with the law. And then verse 19, the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing of a better hope through which we draw near to God. Now let's focus there for a moment, guys. Isn't hope hope? Did they have hope under the Old Testament? Yeah. We have hope today? Why is our hope better than their hope? No.
Because
move your arm. You're committed.
Okay, I was going to say son, but their hope was the hope for Jesus to come to make their sins all go away. Our hope is that Jesus has already come, so we're looking toward heaven, maybe? I don't know if I worded that right.
Yeah, you worded it perfectly. The only thing, I've said the same thing, but I just worded it one word differently.
Okay.
Instead of saying looking to heaven, I said, we get to look back. He came. They were looking ahead. And so we're at an advantage. We're at an advantage because we're not saying, I hope Jesus comes, because if he doesn't come, our sins aren't going to be gone. And we're going, well, he did come. So we're on the other side of the cross. So it's better in that sense. Is there any other advantage when you talk about better? We are going to get into it in the second half of this chapter. Can you think right now what's better?
We have forgiveness of sin.
Okay, we have it instantly. Okay.
We don't have to keep sacrificing.
We have an advocate with the Father. We have that avenue of prayer. We just all those spiritual blessings that we enjoy. Again, they live looking forward to Jesus coming. Mallory put it perfectly, and that's what we're going to get into later on in this book. When you talk about those great men of faith, they considered themselves strangers and pilgrims, and they were looking for something better. But you know what? We know what already happened. So there is that advantage. Anything else, guys? Up through verse 19. Let's take a little bit at a time here. We're up to Mark. Mark Cason. Mark, why don't... We probably won't finish this, Aaron, and so you can kind of see what we talk about and where we leave off. But we will read 20 through 28, and we'll just see how much we actually cover. So three apiece, and Mark, we'll start with you. Start verse 20, yes.
And inasmuch as he was not made priest without an oath, for they have become priests without an oath, but he with an oath by himself said to them, the Lord has sworn that he will not remit for a priest forever, meaning the order of Melchizedek. By so much more, Jesus became assured that a better covenant, and there were many priests because they were prevented by death from continuing.
But he, on the other hand, because he abides forever, holds his priesthood permanently. Hence also, he is able to save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. For it was fitting that we should have such a high priest, holy, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above them.
Who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins, and then for the sins of the people, because this he did once for all when he offered up himself. For the law appoints men as high priests for a week, but the word of the oath which came after the law appoints a son made perfect forever.
All right, so let's just focus on the first part of our reading right now, guys. 20 through 21 and 22. The priests. Here we go. These priests were appointed without what? An oath, assured. Not those guys. There are a lot of problems with these guys, and obviously through that whole reading, what were the problems with these priests?
They had to die.
That's a big one. Okay, that's a big one. What else?
Sinners.
Sinners. Yeah, that's good. Again, we have to make the superiority of Christ come clear for these brethren, for them to understand. That's what the Hebrew writers are doing right now. You want to go back under that old law, Nancy.
They didn't continue after death.
They didn't. And that's what's so cool about this. That's why he mentions in this reading that it's everlasting, it's forever. It will continue until the end of time, unlike theirs. And that was the point. They have to let them see that it shouldn't be a shock to you to understand that there's going to be an end to this. He's showing that there's an end to this in many ways. Number one, their lives. Okay. Think of a high priest. Think of what became of that priesthood when Jesus came on the scene. Tell me a little bit about that priesthood. What were they like? The people he had to deal with when he walked on the face of this earth. They were as corrupt as the day is long. I'm telling you. And see, this is the thing is, this priesthood, what it evolved into, or what it's unlike what Christ is. His is unchanging. It's pure. It's holy, as he talks about him. But we have to see this for what it is. Mark.
We'll say, as people have done in our time, they did in their time, they were not satisfied with what God said. It wasn't long before men started dividing, and those writings had the same weight as the law.
It's funny you should mention that, because it seems what you're talking about right now, Mark, is why this letter is being written in the first place. I mean, who's telling you to go back? The Lord's not telling you to go back. Somebody's telling you to go back. And those people who want to put the emphasis on the old law and that priesthood that is there, you can be sure it was those that were caught up in Judaism. And those Judaizing teachers are wanting you to go back. But you're not getting that from the Lord. You know, if these guys were worth their salt, if these guys were worth their salt during the times of Jesus, and they were as godly as they were supposed to be, what would they have told the people? What would they have told the people? There's the Messiah. Follow him. Look at the miracles. He's the one that we've been talking about, and we're less than him. He's the greater. No, they didn't want that. The jealousy, as Mark's talking about, that bad attitude creeped in. So they weren't listening to the scriptures.
And through their whole time, they had their power in their positions and the people following them.
Exactly. You can see how it happened, guys. Remember that. You can see how. I don't know if the Hebrew writer goes into a lot of detail. He doesn't deal with the how, you know, with their craftiness and their, you know, playing their race card, whatever they're doing with this. He's just coming at it from an intellectual standpoint. You should know that. You should see this. But these high priests, they would do that. You dare question me? You think of the blind man. You're trying to teach us? You're born in sin. Get it. Mark?
Well, we can never understate the financial benefit that the priest had in the temple. That was probably, you know, I don't know exactly, you know Jesus did say he made this into a den of thieves. And so you think about the millions of people that had to come to the temple and buying and selling and the exchange of money, the currency exchange. That had to have been a huge windfall for those religious leaders.
And Mark, think of the connection with government. What do you think? You know, whenever I read about how the Roman Catholic Church, you're describing people who became so powerful that the government official says, we need them on our side because they've got the people in the palm of their hand. So let's bring them involved with it. And so you cross that line and you have what you have today. That's what happens when you get too full of yourself, okay? You think more highly of yourself than you ought to. And you see the wisdom of the checks and balances within the local church. Absolutely. And again, when you remove Jesus out of the picture, this is what happens. Any congregation has a problem today, Jesus isn't where he belongs.
Aaron? I was just thinking that even among the Jews, there were different sects, you know, Pharisees and Sadducees, and yet Jesus Christ brings unity.
Yeah. Perfect. And again, they didn't want that. It was just, it just spread. So that's, again, I see the relevancy of this particular study that we're having here of how it applies even to today with what's going on. And the point, I'm just going to say it again when I said just a moment ago, whether we're talking denominationalism or whether we're talking liberalism, Jesus is not where he belongs. And you need to recognize this. And so in the denominational realm, what are they doing? They're mixing the old and the new together, right? You're not putting Jesus where he belongs. Oh, we absolutely do. No, because the Hebrew brethren needed to be told, no, you weren't. You weren't putting him where you belong because you're trying to go back when Jesus brought in a new law, which was the first part of our reading, because in verse 12, which we didn't focus a lot on, for the priesthood being changed of necessity, there also was a change of the law. That's the point I made earlier, guys, when I asked you, can you have a Levitical priesthood without the law? And he said, the answer is no. And if you're going to have a change of the priesthood, guess what, folks? Because they might say, well, we like the idea of Jesus being our high priest, but we like the old law. No, because with the change of the priesthood, there comes a change of the law. So you can't have both. Oh, okay, that's right. It hangs on that. And that's why you can't have both. And so if you sit there and say, well, we want Jesus as our high priest, but we want to hold on to the old law, he came from the tribe of Judah. It doesn't work. That's the point he made in verse 14. You can't do it. And so, pretty strong stuff there. Verse 21, for they have become priests without an oath, but he has an oath by him who said, the Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. That's why we introduced him. You're a priest by the order of Melchizedek. No beginning, no ending, so to speak, as they're telling him. It's everlasting. That's why they introduced it to him at this point. Any other thoughts in those first three verses, 20 through 22? I'll leave Aaron a little bit. Of course, you can go in chapter 8. A lot of good stuff there. Lots of good stuff. So go ahead and be prepared to help Aaron talk next week. You guys know the rule. All right. Verse 22. So much more, Jesus has become a surety of a better covenant. I like the concept when we talk about better hope, better covenant, better high priesthood, because for those people who think Jesus did, or God created something so bad, which he didn't, but when you say something's better, what was created before wasn't bad. We're not saying bad and better, we're saying good and better. I mean, what God created was good, it served its purpose. So it's not like God really messed up with the law, Aaron.
Well, there's a book in business that's called From Good to Great. And oh. I think of that idea here. You've got something that's good, but there's something here that's greater.
Yeah, exactly. And with the idea of something that's good, how do you separate this good message of the law? How do you separate it from the great? Because it talked about it. It led up to it. Okay, the very teachings of the law said that it was temporary, which we get into in the next chapter, too, in the next two chapters. It was temporary, which we also mentioned in verse 12 here. There needed to be a new law. And that's the greatness of all of this. And so what I'm going to do is, I'm going to leave a little bit for that continuity, because Aaron can take that and go right into chapter 8. So if he starts in about verse 23, 24 next week, then he can go right into that transition if you get out of that chapter, which I'm sure you will, and then go into chapter 8. So come prepared, read up on that, come prepared to participate in the class, and then we'll just think about that. Give the kids a minute and a half. Which is a minute and 33 seconds. It's over. And we cover.